Remember this day is the day that you came out of Egypt, out of the place that you were slaves, because the Lord acted with power to bring you out of there. These are the words that God says to Moses and to Aaron after the story of the Passover. Remember. And not only remember, but pass along the memory. And not just the memory, but the very specific actions, the very series of instructions that you followed on the night of liberation and destruction. I'm not going to talk very much about it today, but I think I need to acknowledge that the Passover is a very violent event. It's one of many such events in the Hebrew Bible, actually, that are hard to reconcile with my own understanding of who God is, but a God who's just and compassionate. The fact that the liberation of one people required the destruction of another people. And I will briefly say to that, that scholars like James Cone and others, liberation theologians, but James Cone in particular, who wrote God of the Oppressed and Black Theology of Liberation, would say that those who are oppressed, those who are under the thumb of empire, need a God who is powerful. A God who can do for them what they cannot, who can wipe out the oppressor. This is not a theology that is comfortable to me, but I have never been on the underside of empire. And so I sit with that discomfort on behalf of those who have had that experience. The Israelite people, who are these descendants of Jacob. So last week, we were in the story of Jacob, many, many, many generations before the events of this story. The Israelite people, they are the descendants of Jacob and his brothers, who were the main characters in the story we heard last week. They had gone from a comfortable place of comfort and being able to dwell among their neighbors in Egypt to, over the generations, being enslaved. The story says a time came when a Pharaoh did not remember Jacob and who began to subjugate the Israelites. And now their situation is flipped. They are on the underside of power. And out of their enslavement, God gives them a leader in Moses and his siblings and a way to prepare the way to freedom. And there's a specific order of things that God says will be important, a number of ways, specific foods that you need to prepare and eat, specific ways of preparing, specific postures to take while you are eating this meal. And in that moment of the meal and of the preparation, both the blood on your doorpost and the ritual itself will mark you as God's people. And then, as in any time of celebration, it is a meal to be shared with neighbors. A meal that is a reminder to be ready at all moments for something new and to follow where God is leading. Okay. Remember this day, which is the day that you came out of Egypt, out of the place where you were slaves, because the Lord acted in power to bring you out of there. So even to this day, as we talked about, as we, you know, we looked at the Seder plate, Jews practice the Passover meal as an act of remembrance of that event. Each of the things on that Passover plate, each commemorative action, each posture, each question, all of that ritual is a reminder of God's power to liberate and God's faithfulness in times of trouble. God gave the people a way to remember with their very bodies that movement from enslavement into freedom. There are some Christians who have adopted the Seder celebration, often combining it with Holy Week services, because that's about the same time when Passover is celebrated. I do not believe that the Seder is ours to celebrate, both because that would be inappropriately co-opting something from another faith and culture, but maybe more theologically important to me, is that Jesus has given us rituals of our own. Jesus has enacted rituals for us to commemorate God's power to liberate and release Rituals that remind us of our calling to service and discipleship through Christ. One of the very powerful things about ritual is, even though it is often accompanied by words, it isn't the words in and of themselves that are powerful. It's the embodiment of memory. I love, Lene, that you are sharing that you gave your students something physical to do in your class, because they will remember that thing that they did with their bodies, probably more than the words that they heard in that class. Or they will connect that thing that they did, sewing, to the thing that they learned in the classroom. And Jesus gave us that gift of a thing to do with our bodies to help us remember the gift of liberation that he gave us. Communion grew out of a celebration of Passover, and it's an example of the ritual, embodied ritual. When Jesus says the words, every time you break this bread and drink this cup, do this in remembrance of me. It's an echo. That central ritual of ours is an echo of what we hear God say to the people of Israel when God says, remember this day, which is the day that you came out of Egypt. And because this ritual of communion is a gift to all Christians, because it is enacted with our bodies, even though it's accompanied by those ritual words, words are only a part. It transcends language, which is the thing that I think about every time I celebrate communion with people who are speaking a language other than English. I often think back to a time when we lived in Korea and we were worshiping with Grace and Peace Church in Seoul, Mennonite Church, and worship was all in Korean, and I really, even now, still understand almost no Korean. But when we celebrated communion, and Naomi was about 3 or 4, and she was sitting on my lap, I could tell her in whispers everything that was happening as the pastor held up the bread and broke it and gave thanks for it and shared it. And when he lifted the cup and gave thanks for it, poured it and shared it with the people, those actions had a deeper meaning than the words that accompanied them. And I could tell my child, okay, so this is what's happening right now, is Jesus is giving thanks for the bread, sharing it with his friends, and he says, remember me when I did. So I'm like telling her, well, this, because that ritual is in my body and in the body of the community. We are the body of Christ, even as we are celebrating with our bodies. One of my favorite memories of this past year of ministry here, my first year of ministry here, was the small foot washing gathering at Kevin and Marion's. And much like communion, and rooted in that same gathering of disciples with Jesus and his friends, Jesus gave a memorial ritual. And this one, remembering the posture that we are to take with each other and with the world. Remember this day, which is the day you came out of Egypt, is a refrain through much of the Hebrew Bible as a reminder that because you were once enslaved under empire, the Israelites must act then with loving kindness to the stranger and the sojourner in their midst. When we wash each other's feet, we are assuming a posture of service and of vulnerability to our neighbor. The opposite, the antithesis of empire. Foot washing has always been one of my favorite rituals of the church, and I'm so happy that Mennonites and Anabaptists have adopted that as one of our core rituals, although not a ton of Mennonite churches still celebrate regularly. I've been happy to be in communities who are willing to do that with me and together in community. The way that the Jewish people continue to remember and celebrate Passover and to tell that story of freedom from Egypt is to act as if it's not only a story from the past. It is contemporary Jewish folks will say it's our story as well. And as I hear, so I listen to this podcast called the Bible Worm Podcast, and it's a conversation between a Jewish scholar and then a Christian scholar. And the Jewish rabbi, her name's Amy Robertson, she talks about how Even now, we tell this story to our children. We celebrate as if enslavement was not something way in the past. It was something that was only that we have only just experienced. We are even now experiencing freedom. And knowing this about the Jewish experience, that the identity of Judaism is still very much tied in with the story of oppression, along with the knowledge of that the Jews are still stereotyped and despised, that anti-Semitism is still very real here and throughout the world, that helps me nuance my feeling about the relationship between Jews and Israel and Gaza. Even as I disagree with how that has played out, I can have empathy for an identity that has experienced generations, thousands of years of oppression. Mennonites also tell stories about our oppression. We love to uphold the stories of martyrdom that are enshrined in the martyr's mirror and the waves of migration that we faced in order to find religious freedom that our European ancestors experienced. That we moved to escape conscription into the nation's armies. And in this way, I've sometimes thought of my Mennonite identity as similar to a Jewish identity, both because we've had this history of violence enacted against our ancestors, and because of the historical connection, at least for Europeans, between ethnicity and faith. The big difference that I am coming to like really root myself in is power. While our ancestors, I'll say my ancestors, may have been captured, tortured, killed because of Anabaptist beliefs, my own ancestors also held prominent positions in government. They were wealthy tradespeople. They were given land of Indigenous people, both in Russia and in Canada or the United States. Or by and European immigrants, Mennonite immigrants, were given land in Canada and the US and Belize and Paraguay and Bolivia and all over the Americas because they were white Europeans who were coming to settle. So that is a huge difference between the experience of migratory Jewish folks and migratory Mennonites. And how we use power, we Mennonites have had access to power in ways that our Jewish kindred have not since our inception. And how we use power, how we tell those stories that are central to our identities are really important. For Mennonites, our return to Jesus' invitation to remember Jesus through serving each other and our communities, especially when we are the ones with power, and to remember Jesus' ministry of nonviolent love every time we eat and drink together. And to use those meals as an opportunity to expand community and the meal rather than close ourselves from others. I was curious how Jews who have been active in justice and liberation movements are celebrating Passover, who are celebrating this event in their Jewish history, how this central ritual is embodied and remembered and celebrated among them. And so I turned to Jewish Voice for Peace, which is an organization and community that's been an active leader in the ceasefire movement in the last year, but even before then had been a liberatory organization. In a statement in their materials that was written in 2022, so before this current crisis in Israel and Gaza, they say, "This year, we dedicate our seders to all of us, to our insistence on intersectionality, from gentrification to colonization. We are organizing to disrupt the root causes of displacement and violence at home and abroad." So their celebration leads them into liberation for all, not just for us. This past year, their memorial celebration was much more pointed. "This year, we will not fulfill the requirement of Shulchan Orech." So these are like the specific requirements of the Passover, by eating a festive meal while weaponized starvation of Palestinian people is taking place. Instead of eating the Passover meal, JVP invited their communities to take liberatory action through calls for ceasefire and restoration of food and medical aid. In a Haggadah written for this year, so a Haggadah is a sort of a litany and instructions for the meal. It's a celebration of it's a like a written celebration of the Passover, much like we might have like a litany for worship as we sort of read and celebrate and eat. I find it similar to things that I've written for like love feast celebrations, where you're celebrating together, but also there are things that we say in worship. And part of that is four questions. Part of every Passover ritual are the four questions that children are supposed to ask about why we're having this particular celebration. And for this particular Haggadah, Rabbi Brant Rosen wrote an interpretation of the four questions. A tradition I love that we don't have a specific parallel to in Christian tradition, that there is a specific thing, a specific role for children in this celebration. And in fact, Mennonites have often excluded children from celebrations of baptism, of communion or foot washing until they're proper members of the church, which I also don't abide by that either. Children are part of our community. And in the four questions, Rabbi Brant Rosen interpreted these in this way. Your child will ask, why do we observe this festival? And your answer will be, it is because of what God did for us when we were set free in the land of Egypt. Your child will ask, were we set free of, your child will ask, were we set free from the land of Egypt that we might hold tightly to the pain of enslavement with a mighty hand? And you will answer, we were set free from Egypt that we might release our pain by reaching with an outstretched arm to all who struggle for freedom. Your child will ask, were we set free from the land of Egypt because we are God's chosen people? And you will answer, we were set free from the land of Egypt so that we will finally come to learn all who are oppressed are God's chosen. Your child will ask, will we set free from the land of Egypt that we might conquer and settle a land inhabited by others? And you will answer, we were set free from Egypt that we might open wide the doors to proclaim, let all who are dispossessed return home. Let all who wander find welcome at the table. Let all who hunger for liberation come and eat. I really love that there are Jewish communities who are holding this way of remembering God's invitation to freedom. It seems to me that it is the most liberative and liberating way to embody the ritual and to remember with our bodies that our freedom should empower us to free others. I pray that our celebration of communion will spur us to feed others, that when we wash each other's feet, we will remember to serve others. May we remember this day, which is the day that you came out of Egypt, out of the place where you were slaves, because the Lord acted with power to bring you out of there. And may we use our Mennonite power, two words that don't get put together very often, to liberate and empower others. Amen.